Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
Really quickly, before we get into this episode, I wanted to mention my Patreon. Patrons get all of the podcasts a week early. I do giveaways, I do some other stuff, but most importantly, if you want me to review your music or artwork or anything else, Patreon is the way to do that. Every month, I do a call for submissions. All you need to do, if you want me to review something, is just post it in the comments of that post. Then I will review it live on Twitch for the hundreds of people that tune into every stream and post it on Patreon for everyone to check out. All you need to do is just join at the $10 and up level. Stay tuned for that post and you are good to go. So if that sounds cool to you and you want me to review your music, artwork, or anything else, hit the link in the show notes for this episode. And thank you very much to everyone who supports over on Patreon. What's up, everybody? Today's episode is a repost of a podcast that I was very, very excited to be on. Hoya from Madball's podcast called The Smokin' Word. If you know anything about hardcore, you know that Madball are just absolute legends. In my opinion, really kind of like the most definitive hardcore band of at least my life. You know, they really laid the template for what hardcore is. And so I was extremely honored to be on the show. And if you like this interview, he's got tons more with people like Jamie Josta, Mike Judge, Ezek. Just really, you know, if you're a New York hardcore enthusiast at all, you definitely want to check this show out. There's a link to that in the show notes of this episode. And I would definitely suggest that you do that if you care about hardcore at all. And with that out of the way, let's get into this episode.
What's up, everybody? You know the drill. Smokin' Word podcast always brought to you by CasaTheRock.com. Support the show. Go to Patreon.com/TheSmokin'Word. You can support there too. The Hard Corner drops every Wednesday on Patreon, then on YouTube the following week. Shout out to everybody supporting the movement. This week, my favorite YouTuber in the game from our world. Let's hear it from my boy Finn McKenty, the Punk Rock NBA podcast. Let's set this shit off.
Welcome to the Smokin' Word. Welcome to the Smokin' Word.
Boom.
There we are.
There we go.
Who was the girl who does the Smokin' Word intro? She
listen,
sounds hot.
Right? It's a friend from Australia. She had a good voice. I had an idea. It had a little Jamaican feel, but I said, let's kind of give it a Salvador Dali thing and let's give it an Australian accent.
I like it.
Jamaican beat. But what's up, bro? I'm glad I got you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. You know, I've been a Madball fan for 30 years, so I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, yeah. And also, it was good. I caught you when you did Ezek's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, all right, he's in the fucking, in the meat grinder. We could sink our teeth in. You know how it
there
goes.
There we go. If Kev One ever starts a podcast, that'll be the next one.
So you are a Bulldoze guy.
I love Bulldoze.
Yeah, they definitely, that's a hardcore band that is starting to get lost in the sauce. I'm bringing that shit back, that word, lost in the sauce back.
Yeah.
But they're starting to get forgotten about being the fathers of a style and also sure. of you know, now it's common to be the extra beatdown style of moshing and all that. They had a lot to do with that.
More than a little bit. Yeah. I mean, that's like the whole idea of like beatdown. I mean, that's Bulldoze, you know.
I'll tell you a funny story about fucking Bulldoze. It just popped in my head because it just, I don't know. You just reminded me. Well, anyway, so we're on the Warped Tour and fucking we're doing the Hazen Street shit. And on that tour, it's, you know, it's all those type of bands, you know. Yeah. And we're standing there and some girls come up to us and they ask, I had a DMS hat on. And they said, oh, what's this DMS stuff? I see it all over the place.
I saw it in the Good Charlotte video.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what they were saying. I'm like, you know, and I'm kind of like, and then the guy next to me, he goes, everybody knows what that means. It means Doc Martin stump. And I turn around, I go, what do you know about that? And he goes, Fat Kevin, he used to fucking abuse me and all my boys. Long story short, he was the singer for Coheed and Cambria. Shout out to Claudio.
Wow.
Small world. He was an upstate kid on North Jersey, which is close to upstate New York. And, you know.
Wow. I would have never guessed that, but there you go.
And what bugged me out was, I knew he was the singer of a Coheed or whatever, but it caught me off guard. Like, cause he even said it like everybody knows that.
And, right, right.
Well, he knew probably from the receiving end, or maybe one of his friends, maybe not from the best way.
He's got a Bulldoze beatdown.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let me ask you something that I'm curious. Your fucking name, what is it?
My Finnegan, my first name?
Yeah, so that's all right. So that's your full first name, Finnegan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Irish.
Well, I guess. I mean, my father's from Norway and my mom is American. So okay. I don't know where that came from. Well, actually, I do. It's named after a book by this guy named James Joyce. It's this book called Finnegan's Wake, is this weird book from the 70s because my mom was weird. So she named me after it. Like, it has no punctuation. It's absolutely unreadable.
Because it sounds, you know what it sounds like? It sounds perfect for what you do because it sounds like, yo, who's that reporter? Oh, that's Finn McKinty from the Daily Planet.
Yeah.
That's how I hear it. I hear it like, that just sounds editorial.
It does sound editorial.
And also your family. So, but you are born, North Pacific West, right?
Yep. Yeah. Seattle area.
Seattle, right? That's where you were from, the burbs of Seattle, right?
Yep. Yep.
And how the fuck? Well, Seattle has a lot of punk rock roots.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, we had the Accused and the Melvins and stuff back then. But I discovered your kind of version of hardcore, which, you know, back then, like nobody outside the tri-state area really knew or cared, like early 90s.
True.
Nobody knew or cared about New York hardcore back then. I found it from In Effect, which they had at Tower Records.
Mm.
That was sort of like my... Yeah. Like, and Maximum Rock and Roll, but you know, they hated all that stuff.
Oh, too. They hated us.
You know, so, but yeah, full, In Effect really was like, so shout out to Kevin. I still talk to him on Facebook sometimes.
Oh, yeah, the best.
In Effect was fucking awesome. They had it at Tower Records. So, shout out to whoever was like the zine buyer back then. And that's how I found out about, you know, Scarhead and all that stuff, you know, like early 90s, the very, very beginning, you know, back when Toby was still in the band and everything. Like,
yeah. And it's crazy because even the Seattle area, it has its own weird energy, even in its hardcore and its punk rock and its metal, like you named the Melvins. Melvins have all of that and they're not like normal of any of those.
Or the Accused, same thing.
Yeah. What is it about what's in the water up there?
Well,
it's like, you know, salmon shit.
Yeah. These days, you know, you think of Seattle and you think about like Amazon and Microsoft. Everyone's here is fucking rich. It's like San Francisco now, in the good ways and the bad ways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, back then it was very isolated, like late 80s, early 90s. There was nothing going on here. It was very isolated. It was mostly like logging and fishing and stuff. There was nothing going on here, you know, until Nirvana blew up. And even then, like, there's still like, there wasn't a lot going on. Like, you remember back in the 90s, a lot of bands wouldn't even play Seattle because the routing just sucked. The closest city was Portland, which is even smaller than Seattle. Yeah. So it's like, you know, most of them would go to Northern California and then just stop. So I think it's the same thing as like a lot of places that end up having kind of a unique scene is you kind of just got to do your own thing because there's nothing else going on for better or worse. So you kind of, you know, you can discover scenes from other parts of the country, but you're like observing it from like a distance. You're not part of it.
You know what I mean?
Which is good and bad.
You have to look for it. Yeah, I know how that goes. Because
right.
Even coming from New York, there was a point where, you know, you still got to hunt for it because record stores weren't fucking
right.
with it.
Right.
You know, two or three record stores that would have it. And if they didn't have it, you hope that a lot of tape trading back then when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah,
I never personally did it, but I remember it was big, you know, tape trading. And in the back of the heavy metal magazines, you had all the addresses, which you were yep. into. And you would just randomly send people shit. They send
That's what I would do with Maximum Rock and Roll. You know, I would read, you know, in the back, they had the classified ads.
Yeah.
And the reviews and stuff. And I would read every fucking word of all of those.
Yes.
And I would go order demos and shit like that. That's how I discovered a lot of shit.
Yeah, for sure. And what was you coming up? What was the local club? Because we played Seattle a handful of times. And I want to say one of them was Corazon. Was it that?
Called El Corazon now. It used to be called the Off Ramp, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And then I think they changed the name of it another time, but I don't remember. It's El Corazon now.
But that was like the spot?
Yeah, Rock Candy, you probably also played at
some
point.
Yeah. Oh, no, of course we play Rock Candy. Yeah, well, I played that on that crazy Hatebreed. Well, on that part, I don't know if Hatebreed was on it, but Scarhead, Madball, Earth Crisis.
I remember that one around 98 or so. God, that was one of the best tours of all time. I saw that one in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one, too.
That was a great one. One of my all-time favorites. Some of the craziest shit that's ever happened. Even Rock Candy, even us there. The best part of that tour was us rolling up to Portland and they're protesting. And out of all people, they're protesting Earth Crisis. For once, I was like, yes, not us. I was like, out of all people, you're going to fuck with them.
I remember talking to Scott from Earth Crisis about that. And I was like, why do these people, like, you guys are on tour with Madball. Why does everyone think you guys are like the ignorant thugs? And he's like, dude, I don't know.
They are. Shout out to Scumbag Scott. That's my brother. I love Earth Crisis. But yeah, that was so great. I was like, you know, and that's what I loved about Earth Crisis. Not that I loved that it happened to them, but I loved that they were the angels with dirty faces.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hilarious. I was also into a lot of the more kind of like, you know, like crust kind of stuff as well. So there was like a place back then, the Velvet Elvis in Seattle, which is where, all those type of bands like Man is the Bastard and stuff would play. You know, those like more like ABC No Rio type bands. Yeah. So I was into that stuff too.
And that's kind of more Seattle's pulse, right?
Yeah, like, definitely.
Like
definitely.
Kind of more on that. The
nobody crush. Was like nobody. I remember like when Master Killer came out and I was just like obsessed with it. Nobody, not a single goddamn person in the entire fucking state gave a shit about Marauder.
Especially, and even then, because the metalcore thing wasn't big within the hardcore scene, crossover bands, it was still a New York Northeast thing.
I mean, I remember, as late as, 92 or something, people were saying the Cro-Mags were too metal.
Yeah.
You know?
Listen, when we
hilarious. Imagine hardcore kids not liking Cro-Mags because they were too metal. That's how it was.
I'll give you a good one too. Which was a Metallic album, but we dropped Look My Way 1998.
Yeah.
You had to see the backlash we got for that album.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
People were like, what's up with that metal album? Yo, what's up with that metal album? And I'm like, the truth is, at that time, all the hardcore bands were doing the punk rock shit.
Right. Yeah. That's when like AF went more punk.
Gotta go. Yes. Yeah. And where, if you look at the timeline, everybody was hey-hoing and we were doing
it all. Yeah.
We were doing more the double bass deep groove.
Yeah.
It wasn't on purpose. We naturally always kind of go against the grain, but I always liked metal and we were just trying to get hard at the time. I was like, okay, Madball was never heavy. We were more like Hatebreed is heavy. When you hear Hatebreed, you hear machinery.
Right.
Madball is more like a bank robbery. That's what I tell people, you know? It's a different kind of heart, a different kind of energy. You know what I mean? And at the time, we were trying to bring more heaviness, and people flipped on us. They were like, what's up with that record? Yo, you a metal band now? Blah, blah. And I'm like, look at the lay of the fucking the world right now. Right, I'm like, right. That shit might as well be a fucking
was
a
punk that, rock record. Was that the album with Been There, Done That? Or is that the one before?
You know what? Been there, I don't even remember. But
I had that 7-inch.
Yeah, it was on the 7-inch. I forget too. And that's my one of my favorite songs. That
is. Speaking of groove, that's that groove at the beginning. Man, that is so good.
I know. You want to know something? We would do it live and people would just look at us. That's why we don't play it.
That's like, too bad. That's one of my favorite. That's like a very underrated Madball song.
Thank you. And I agree. You know what? We always thought like, wow, that beginning flavor thing where we're like, yo, we got some shit here. Like, yo, we're going to be like, you know, not like cutting edge, but we're like, yo, there's something there. Yo, we would play live and people would just stare and look at us like morons.
Respect to everyone who's been in the band, but Will Shepler is such a fucking amazing drummer, man. Like, so much groove. I thought it was really interesting. You posted that clip on Instagram yesterday of Set It Off with the drums from Eric B. and Rakim.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that grabbed me about Madball, like instantly, because I grew up listening to rap before I knew what hardcore was.
Yeah.
Starting like 87 or so when I was a little kid. It always had, like, it wasn't like rapcore, you know, but it always had like a little bit of that groove and like, you know, it makes sense. Like a lot of the New York stuff had that kind of groove without being overtly rap.
Yeah. Like some bands kind of took it and were more like a rap core. We didn't. It was just more. I always said this. If you're not going to mosh or stage dive to us, I want you to bop your head. And if you bop your head, we got you.
Exactly. So,
and my concept of the band was in New York and anywhere, you hear the guys hearing the hip hop in the cars, right? And you hear it go by, you hear it boom, 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 boom. And you're like, you hear it go by. Right. And I said, I want that effect every time we play. That if you know, you don't got to have that. Not everybody shows anger or attitude that way. But everybody has a pulse.
Right.
And this is a pulse. So I would always shoot for that. But yeah, like hip hop back then, there was no Pro Tools, no MacBooks.
Right.
So I always used to say, I want to do something that makes me feel like that. So what I would do is write to those tracks. But I would purposely say, I don't want to be a rap hardcore band because we don't do that. I love hip hop, but I'm a purist. You know what I mean?
I like both of those things, but together it's, there's some like Downset did it really well.
Yeah.
But,
very good.
But for the most part, I think that's kind of corny, but it's very interesting. You know, just getting back to what we were talking about before, it's interesting how much now, you know, because of the internet, everyone knows about everything. But you know, back in the 80s and 90s, it was not like that. And it was like, very hard to discover anything that wasn't from like your hometown. Like you really had to work for it.
Yeah, no, that was definitely like, I remember I would go to the record store and just look for cool covers.
Right.
You know, this looks hard. Or yeah, I saw them. I saw this band rock that band's t-shirt.
Right.
You know, that was
a gamble. Sometimes you ended up finding something amazing.
Yes.
Sometimes you're like, oh, fuck.
But that made
it again. Yeah.
And I also think, though, we gave things more of a chance back then because you used your week, the money you saved up. You're like, I'm going to fucking listen to this record no matter what, 20 times. Nowadays.
When I got SSD, How We Rock, I was so bummed.
I know what you mean. And I'm like, but nowadays, kind of like, you know, like anything, like a relationship, you got to give shit time. Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, that's why some of those records, when we did connect with them, we connected to this day. We're like, oh, because we invested time in looking for the connection that we didn't know we were looking for.
Like you know I got I mean? Some of the weird Black Flag records and I didn't like it at first.
Yeah.
But, you know, I spent, you know, $8 on it or whatever, which back then was like all my money. You know, so I'm like, well, I'm going to listen to this fucking thing and I'm going to try to like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And eventually I did, you know.
Exactly. I remember buying the Madball 7-inch. I had seen Freddie jump up AF. I didn't know him, but I remember going to Bleeker Bob's and said, I have enough for a 7-inch. Let me see if there's a 7-inch. And I go, oh, shit, they put it out. Fuck it, let me get it. I remember, and the next thing I know, I'm fucking 30 years fucking doing this shit.
But ruined your life.
It ruined my fucking life. Like, it ruined it. It blessed me and fucking fucked me at the same time. But let me ask you this. You never in a band?
I was in some, like, you know, crappy bands when I was in high school and stuff, you know, but nothing. You know, we covered,
I want to know the name.
Stuff.
We need to know the name.
You know, I don't know that we ever even had a real name. We played some just random shows that probably, you know, 18 people went to or something like that. But we covered like Minor Threat and DRI, like that kind of thing.
It's funny. Like I just told you. So by the time this comes out, my last episode, I just did Mike Judge. So it was good. We have a pretty some bugged out stories about Ian McKay. You might want to check out on that one.
Yeah.
Pretty bugged out. Some people, if you by the time this comes out, if they might have heard already. And they might not be too happy about it, but
I want to hear it. I'm interested.
I got a couple of things in the bag. There's another one on the bag that I was talking about with you behind the scene.
Yeah,
I'll let you know. I told you who, but I'm saving that one for like 4th of July. You know, the fucker. Let's fire.
That's a good one. That'll be the 4th of July present.
And that was by him. He goes, "Why don't we do it on the 4th of July?" And at that moment, the Marines from Iwo Jima lifted the flag in my head. Right. You know the. Fireworks went off. Yeah, I got real American for a second there. And fucking, all right. So in school, you had to be part of a newspaper. You had to be part of some, some type of editorial news. What was your thing? What led you into where you at now?
Well, I started out making zines in like 92, 93.
Wow. That's early on.
Yeah. I was like 14, 15. Interviewing just, you know, basically I was into a lot of those more like ABC to No Rio type bands and nobody was really writing about them outside of a few people. So I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to do it. So I interviewed like Capitalist Casualties and Man is the Bastard and Spaz and all that kind of stuff and Dystopia. And then I eventually ended up interviewing other bands like Downset and VOD and stuff like that. In school I was the editor of our paper for a couple years. I was also
spoken to be a hardcore kid without something, because hardcore kids are this, they're sneaky.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like being a hardcore kid, you already know. Okay, kid, there's a certain type of animal you have in you, but then you always have those that, you know, there's some of us that grind. You know, in that type of environment, you know, in education.
I liked it. Yeah, I was also on the debate team, which was really fun. I took debate really seriously. Like, I went to debate camp and stuff. I remember, like, and went to, like, tournaments every weekend and stuff like that. And that, I actually learned more from doing debate in high school than just about anything else in my life, because you learn how to persuade people of a, you know, you got to make your point and persuade them, and the judges vote on it. And I learned a ton from
It's basically like a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people, that's a really common thing, is like people who do well in debate oftentimes end up going to law school, which, you know, maybe in another life I would have done that. I don't know.
Yeah, and definitely it works for what you do now, because, you know, to talk your shit, you got to be able to cover your ass with facts and or at least your homework. You know what I mean?
I mean, people aren't going to listen anyway. It doesn't matter. Everyone thinks they're a fucking expert on everything, so it doesn't matter. But
you know that. You know that. That's no matter what. I got some little shithead kids now trying to tell me what hardcore is. But it's going to be what it is.
Right.
You know, I'm like, all right, if that's what you want to say. I'm not going to argue with you. I got my own son to spank, you know, which I don't spank. But I want to beat the crap out of him, but I don't touch him. But anyway, that's another episode. But, that's what I caught. That's what I liked. I was catching your show. What I liked about your angle, so it's something what I'm doing now, and I got to say, what you did kind of influenced me a little bit. It's a part what you do and a part what these hip-hop guys are doing now. That's the one thing, and I'm a hip-hop head, but I don't like a lot of things about the way hip-hop moves. But what I'm noticing now, what a lot of hip-hop dudes were doing is kind of, you know, giving more of a news-based kind of what's going on in the world. And you kind of did something similar, but you may have narrowed it down to a certain subject, but it's something kind of what's going on now, or it's involved in our world. Something that is water cooler talk, but now you're kind of pinpointing it and say, okay, let's make it a subject and let's fucking hit it.
Yeah, I follow a lot of those like rap channels too. So that actually was really influential to me.
Yeah, exactly. And what I use, and that's what I started doing now, which I'm dropping every Wednesday, called The Hard Corner with my boy Busky. Basically, I felt exactly how I felt what you were doing when I saw what you were doing. I said, I'm glad somebody from our side is speaking, interpreting the lay of the land from our way, from our behind our eyeballs out. You know, it's always, we would always hear, yeah, okay, you know, Fat Mike, shout out to all those guys and all that. But all right, that's different. It's
right.
Or we're hearing on the guy from Machine Head, shout out to them. But it's always, but like coming from a hardcore kid, somebody who was involved in this world, who really involved with this world, doing it and doing it right. That's the difference. That. You know, because that way we could rally around somebody. We could say, listen, let him talk for us.
Well, but I want to be careful not to talk for everybody because, you know, like, for example, I did that video about New York hardcore, you know,
which I loved.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But that was a tough one for me because, you know, I didn't grow up there. And like, that's something like I have a lot of respect for that scene. So, you know, I had to be careful to say, look, I'm not going to tell you that this is the history because I wasn't there. I'm not the person to tell that story. But I'm just going to tell you my experience with it.
Yeah. And that's what you did. That was fucking great. Cause I think that's where I actually might've hit you up originally. And then not because people talking about Madball or none, because it was done perfect. And from somebody who wasn't from the scene, and you made it a point to say that. And you said it again, the Bay team, that should you fucking, you should give yourself, your parents, extra hug or kiss for putting you in that school. Cause that helped.
Yeah.
With shit like that, we're basically articulating what you got to say. And same thing for us, like having somebody with a voice that will be taken seriously from our world. Hardcore has always been looked at as, oh, and punk rock, that's some little kid shit. That's little kid music.
Right.
We're not little kids no more.
No, we're old men now.
Yes, exactly. And
I
what
wish I
like,
was a little kid.
But what I'm glad is also we got the voices from us doing shit, you know, very... You know, well done, thought out. The homework is done. The presentation is done. Again, I take a lot of things from you. I watch what you're doing, how guys are doing, and trying to elevate the game.
Because, I appreciate that.
No, and that's what I love. And again, that's what keeps me rocking and rooting for guys like you. How the fuck did you fall into this lane? Obviously, you know, the regular MySpaces and Friendsters was definitely a springboard for a lot of sharing conversation. What made you kind of, obviously the zine shit, what made you take it to this level now? Like once the first level up?
Well, to me, I mean, this is the same thing as the zine stuff I was doing 30 years ago.
True.
I did a couple blogs like, you know, 15 years ago or something when that was like a thing. And then when it became obvious to me that YouTube was the place where people were having these conversations, I was like, well, I guess I got to do it there. And it took me a while to kind of figure it out. It took me a good year or so of making videos that nobody really watched and stuff, which is frustrating. But, you know, that's part of the deal. It's like, you know, when you start a band, you got to go play your horrible sets to three people. And, you know, that's just part of the deal. I mean, basically that's just my thing is like wherever people are paying attention now, that's where I want to be. Like I started doing Twitch last year, which I consider late to the game, but I like to be a little bit late at this point. Like I'm not trying to be the first person to do it. Cause I mean, think about like how many bands were the first people to do a thing.
Yeah. They're not benefiting from the
They're not at all. No.
I know. Trust me. I know what you mean. That's smart. That's smart. Like let everybody up. Get the acclimates of being the guy, the prairie men living on the prairie. I want to be the guy who lives on the building built on the prairie that was already
exactly
with a corner store built already.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. So that's kind of how I look at it. But, you know, it's just like, you know, and a lot of people like, you know, I get a lot of criticism because maybe they feel like I talk about stuff that's not hardcore or punk or whatever too much. But you know, it's the same thing for you guys. It's like, you could, you know, you guys were pretty early to playing the big rock festivals in Europe and stuff like that. And I know people talk shit about that. And, you know, there's some bands that had major label deals and stuff. And, I want to talk about hardcore as much as possible, but, it's the same thing as, you know, with Madball playing those big shows. If you want to reach a bigger audience, you can't just stay in the tiny little world of hardcore, which is a fucking tiny world. I mean, I remember thinking, you know, in 96 or 97 that VOD was like the biggest band in the world and like that they were like rock stars. And thinking back, like, dude, they're playing to 250 people on a good night.
On a good night.
You know, probably making $400, you know, between the whole band. Yes. Hardcore, and they were a huge, you know, same with Earth Crisis, they were huge at the by the standards for hardcore, but hardcore is just not a big world. And I want to be able to, you know, spread. I always try to sprinkle that stuff in wherever I can. But if all I did was make videos about obscure hardcore bands, nobody would watch it.
It'd be an obscured fucking audience.
Yeah, there'd be 17 people watching a video about, you know, the fucking Starkweather demo or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know what you mean. And it's true. But what I like is it's not far off, though. All right. Yeah, you're not singing about fucking, you know, the Psychos. Yeah, I mean, you're singing. You're not writing about fucking doing things. But, you know, it's still branches off the branch off the branch. Right. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's funny. People forget those fucking metal magazines. What we used to go through and buy for one little article of a hardcore band. Yep. You had to go through a whole bunch of other shit. It's called, it's all in the realm.
Cold Chamber on the cover.
Exactly.
And then on page 42, there was three paragraphs about Candiria.
Exactly. And you would do that, but you had to get through, you had to sift through the shit. You know, or whatever, what shit to you is not shit to somebody else. But it's all under the umbrella of the whole rock and roll, counterculture, whatever you want to call it, heavy music. That's why I liked what you did. And the more I do it, like when I started podcasting again, even more and more, I forget because a lot of these dudes are my friends. But then I'm realizing I don't say it's a hardcore podcast. Guess what? I know I got so many friends that are metal guys that rap. I don't give a fuck. I'm like, I like talking to people, you know? And I'm like, wow, I just happen to know a lot of interesting people.
Yeah.
Fucking lucky. But I'm like, I love it all. Like, you know, I'm like, you know, you can find, but I'm like, I like that. Again, I'm the guy rooting for where I think it's time. We need more of these, you know, the metal guys got the Golden Metal Gods Award.
Yep.
They have, you know, shout out to all those dudes and, you know, all these platforms have that, but we don't, meaning hardcore punk rock.
I would say, and I'm not trying to like blow smoke up my own ass, but I would say that as far as like, you know, I don't think there's anybody who has talked about hardcore, you know, that has is like my channel isn't huge, but like, I think it's probably gotten, you know,
you're the
more,
biggest channel. Yes.
I think so. I mean, you know, I've got, you know, like that video about Earth Crisis that has like 400,000 views or something now. And, you know, I understand they were on CNN and shit back in the day, but as far as like, someone doing like a detailed breakdown of it, I don't think anybody has talked about hardcore and gotten more views than I have.
Absolutely. That's a fact. I know that for a fact because I'm on it and I'm looking, you know, and I watch. And also that's how I ran into you wasn't nobody put me on. You know, you watch one channel, you start getting fed all these shits. All right, let me check this out. And one, I was catching those and I was like, oh, this is bugged out. Even if you did one on, you know, Gerard, what's his band? My Chemical Romance to somebody. Because I know, by the way, Gerard's a hardcore kid. You know, he used to come to early Mad Boy shows.
Yeah.
You know, but it was like, I would see that and you would do, and I'm like, I get it because I know, you know, and I'm like, yo, that's cool angle. And then you would hit them all over the head with an OG regular, okay, like the one you did, the New York hardcore one. Yep. But then you'll hit another angle, you know, the Baby Metal one or something like that. Well, guess what? Mabel also played with Baby Metal.
Oh, really? That's amazing.
Yeah, in Europe, we did Fest with them.
That makes sense. And when I'm like, and when I'm doing a video about My Chemical Romance, behind me, there's a Born Against flyer.
Yeah. No, exactly. You know? No, I get. Yeah, of course. It's what it is. It's we're talking about what we engulfed in.
Yeah.
You know, and people forget that we're engulfed in all this shit. Look at the news. When you read the newspaper, you don't like everything you read in the news.
Sure.
You know, you're lucky if you read something, a good article that makes you happy. In general, it's fucking sad shit. And man, this ain't, and we got to, when we give news, we're just basically, you know, like it or not, we're showing you what's connected to us, you know, and you could take it for what it is, but it is what it is, you know?
And you know, another thing, I think a lot of people, you know, there's a certain segment of fans who only like one genre of stuff, right? Yeah. But what they need to realize is the people in the bands that they listen to, nobody in a good band is like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the guys from your favorite band don't go home and listen to 50 other bands that sound exactly like their band. Yeah. They probably listen to everything but that.
Yeah.
So I would encourage everyone to, like, you don't have to like everything, but at least, you know, try to understand why other people like it. Step outside your comfort zone. And, you know, if you can sort of, you know, challenge yourself to do that, I think you'll probably be glad you did.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because I was opposite, you know, and I admit that I was one of those who's like, fuck that New York Hawker. Why am I going to listen to that shit when I got Breakdown, Raw Deal, Rest in Pieces, Sick of It All, AF, Cro-Mags. Fuck everybody else.
That's the New York way, is like, you know? You don't give a shit about anything outside like your six blocks of your borough.
Exactly.
You know, you don't even, if you're from Brooklyn, you don't even care what happens in Queens.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact was that later on, I regret it. Like, again, it's different with the suicidals and stuff. That's family right there. But, you know, even then I was like, I wouldn't bump as much suicidal because I had the Cro-Mags. You know what I mean? I had my version. So I was like, I'm good. I'm good over it. But then later on, I fucking regret it, because later on, I'm hearing these records from some OGs. I'm like, yo, that's dope. And I'm like, fuck, I'm actually late to the game.
Right. You know, I'm a motherfucker. Like, people are looking at me, like, trying to follow me. And I'm like, they've took streets that I don't even know existed, you know?
Totally. So you don't want to be that person. And that's one thing that I actually was glad that growing up, and I grew up, like, way outside Seattle, like 20 miles outside Seattle, which now is like a place people commute from, but there was nothing there when I grew up there. And I'm actually glad about that, because, you know, there really was hardly any scene for me to care about. So I had no choice and I didn't know anything about anything. Now it's like, and I'm not trying to be the old man saying, like, oh no, it's different, but it is kind of different. It's like, people understand, they sort of understand, oh, here's this like identity that I'm going to choose. Like, am I like the grindcore kid, or am I the thrash metal kid, or am I the pop punk kid? And you pick one. But, you know, back in the day, sort of nobody knew anything about anything. So you just sort of stumbled into just being into whatever you were into. And I'm grateful for that, because that's how I ended up listening to Green Day and fucking, Madonna and EPMD at the same time.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's the one thing that I did love about the scenes that weren't Boston, New York, or an LA vet. You had to be more open, because you weren't getting everything.
Right. Like, there was one hardcore band in Seattle in the 90s, which was Undertow.
Exactly.
You know, there were other bands, but Undertow was like the only one that really mattered and played shows. And like, there was one band.
Yeah, exactly. And again, and with that being said, that's why you get bands later, like what you were saying. Who was it from there? From the Seattle, the Melvins. Exactly. Like, these mishmashes of, you could tell they were into everything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, in New York, the era that we love, you could kind of tell the same four bands we all listen to. You know what I mean? These other bands you would hear, you're like, I hear this. I hear, like, again, when I met Toby, he kind of would bring up all these DC bands that I heard about and then forgot about them. Then he would re-bring them up. And I'm still not into them, but the Screams and all that type of shit, I'm like... But that was, again, it took somebody from DC, and Toby was already more in that type of scene. Toby's like that New York hardcore and that DC punkish hardcore.
Right.
That's his. So he kind of would be the only guy I really knew into that. And everybody else was the older dudes.
Right.
So it didn't matter. So I was like,
I guess some people still like this shit. I used to think like,
I never got into any of that DC stuff. It was always too like, you know, not that I'm some kind of tough guy or something, but just always too like wimpy for me.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm an extremist. I want someone to just either like bulldoze, marauder, just like pure, like fucking ignorant aggression.
Yeah.
Or I want it to be, you know, Britney Spears and Madonna.
The Sundays. I hear you.
I don't want it in the middle.
Yeah. And I hear you. I know how that shit goes. I'm the same way. I'm definitely was like on the heavier edge of everything. And then later on, you know, even when I was like that, I'd go home and listen to the Jackson 5 and then love it, but then still be like, nah, I'm only about the hard shit. Like, almost like being like, I would blank myself out to myself. Yeah. And then later on, I'm realizing, I'm like, yo, you're listening to all this shit. You know, you're talking all this shit, but yet fucking blah, blah, blah. Fucking crazy.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, And I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts. And new episodes come out every Monday.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
But let me ask you this. What advice would you give anybody trying to do what you're doing, coming up in the whole Twitch podcast, whatever universe you want to call it?
Well, I'll give you some general advice and some specific advice. General advice is, for one, be consistent. Understand that it's most likely going to take you a while before anybody gives a shit about what you're doing. That, you know, it might be like a year or two. So just be willing to like grind, and just, it's going to be disheartening. It's going to suck when you put out a video or whatever and two people watch it.
Yeah.
It sucks. I've been there. But
you hear this, motherfuckers? Make sure you subscribe, you fucks.
That's right.
Yeah.
Subscribe and the Patreon, too. Make sure patreon.com/thesmokingword right now.
You know it. That's right. Get on that shit. That's right. That's why, you know, a shout out to my patrons. That's why I'm trying to step up the set. We're stepping up the game, because the same thing, I really, on the real, I believe our world, you know, again, with guys like you, we have the people in place. Now we just got to keep pumping it out and keep like doing what you do and showing where we come from, but also showing, you know, we got a broad spectrum on what we're into, and we're still knowing where the fuck we come from, but also giving our input on what we think, you know, what everything else is. But consistency, what else you were saying?
Consistency, and have a specific point of view. And you may not know what that is yet. The way you will find, but just start doing shit. Don't like, this is to me is like the essence of punk to me is like, you just do shit. Even if you don't really know what you're doing, you don't know what's right. I mean, and that is how you will find what's right. And don't worry about if it's like unpolished and the production values are bad and like whatever, that shit doesn't matter. Like, how many great recordings do you love that were the product of a bunch of fucking teenagers who barely knew how to tune their guitars going to Don Fury for 4 hours, and it came out fucking amazing? even though all those people now would look back on it and be like, man, we had no fucking clue what we were doing.
Yeah.
So just make shit and keep making shit. That's the most important thing. But you'll eventually find your specific point of view, which is like the one thing that only you can do. And there's no way to do that other than to just make shit. And eventually it will sort of percolate up. It will make itself apparent. For example, for me, like, you know, I grew up in all the kind of stuff that we talked about, but also like, I think about things from a business point of view, because like, that's what I went to school for. That's what I do for work. Like, to me, it's just how I look at it. And I'm not saying that's the only, like, I'm not saying that's good or bad. That's just how I see things. And I can't see things any other way. So when I talk about music, it's not so much about what I like or don't like. It's just like, well, you know, here's what happened and here's why I think it was successful or not successful.
Yeah.
That's my point of view. Some people don't like it. Some people do, whatever, but just find your point of view and understand that not everyone is going to like that. There's going to be a lot of people who don't like you, and that's okay. And it's not important. What's important is connecting with the people who do like you. Again, to use the Madball example, very few bands were hated more than Madball by the quote unquote punk establishment, you know, in the '90s.
For sure.
The number one fucking bad guy, Madball and Earth Crisis were the fucking, you know, Joker and fucking Penguin of hardcore back then. But it doesn't matter. Like, what mattered is that you found the people who did love what you do. And that's what enabled you to do everything you have done. There might have been fucking a million people that hate you, but if there's 100,000 people that love you, that's what's important.
Man, you're right. You're right.
And as far as specific tactical stuff goes, I would say start out on TikTok, because right now that is where it's easiest to build a following. You could start out right now making TikToks on your phone for $0. And if you make the right thing, you might get 10,000 views on your first TikTok.
Wow.
You might not.
But so yeah, but I know what you mean.
That, but you could. I mean, there's, I know people that, you know, on their fourth TikTok got a million views.
Crazy.
You know, that happens all the time. And nobody expects it to be like visually polished. So you can just do it on your phone. It's okay. Like, it's actually kind of good if it looks like shit on TikTok.
Yeah. Cause it kind of, I know what you mean. Like, people want to see.
It's like cut and paste zine, you know? That's
and I get it. The same idea, the whole behind the scenes kind of shit. You want to see the raw shit, the real shit, you know? Like,
I would not start out doing a podcast unless you already have a following from something else. For example, like you or Toby, you know, people know who you guys are from all the shit you've done. So you have a built-in audience for that. For someone else who is starting from zero, it's really hard to grow a podcast just because like podcast discovery is hard. I would not start. I talked to some people still who want to do like blogging. I would not do that because it's just very hard to get people to care about written content. I would start on TikTok because it's the easiest place to get started and get discovered. YouTube is also a good place, but YouTube sort of requires you to do a little bit more in terms of production and stuff. So I don't think starting on YouTube is bad. If you are inclined to make sort of longer form content, YouTube's not a bad place to start, but I would say start on TikTok and just try to make, you know, I understand people have jobs and school and other shit like that, but try to make 3 TikToks a day,
like
every day forever.
Think about this.
What if you made 3 TikToks a day for a year? That's 1,000 TikToks. What do you think would happen? Do you think one of those would take off? I bet it would.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And I agree. And I know that from doing not just working out, obviously, with the band, and even with the podcast, you know, consistency, they got to recognize if they like you or not, they're going to recognize you're in it.
Yep.
You know, and that's all you need, that you know that we're playing ball. Because I tell people, I go, you don't got to like me or do this, but you got to know I'm playing ball. We in it. We got uniforms on. We got baseball bat. We're ready to play.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the name of the game.
Yeah, and that's true. And that's good because especially coming from you, I know you must hear that a lot. Did you ever think about putting out some type of fucking, or have you, any type of podcasting for dummies type of thing? Or you don't want to give your secret? Are you like Houdini? You got some secrets that you're just going to die with? Or do I got to go over there with my boys and fucking wait outside your house for some YouTube secrets?
I would love to do that. I just don't really have time. I also have I also run a company with some other people called URM Academy. If you guys are into like mixing and stuff, you might know Nail the Mix. That's kind of our big product. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
I've seen you talking about that also. Yeah. That you were doing a lot of those programs of
So we teach people, we teach people how to record and mix music. We've had a bunch of bands on that people would know, like Bring Me the Horizon, Fall Out Boy, Meshuggah, Periphery, Data Remember, Gojira, I don't know, Opeth, like everybody. We've had like 75 bands or something on now. So I just don't have a lot of time. But I am actually super passionate about education. That's actually what I've, I mean, for the past 10 years, I've run online education companies.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it and I love it. I just don't have time to make something specifically about YouTube, but I would love to someday if it ever works out.
So I know you do that, and I know you kind of got a lot of jobs, a couple of different jobs. Everything you do online, is that your main job? Meaning from the punk rock, the podcast, from the TikTok, is that all those? Is that your main gig?
Well, you know, I actually consider Nail the Mix to be my real job, because I'm going to keep doing that forever. I may not do YouTube forever, but I'm going to do Nail the Mix as long as I fucking can, because that's what I went to school for. Like, that's what I never actually expected YouTube to be anywhere near this successful. It's just like, it's kind of amazing. But, you know, I went to school for design and business. So that's what I do now, is like my main job is what is called like a product manager, which is to decide. I work with our engineer and basically I decide what features on our website get built and then work with him to like help build them. And that's like, that's what I actually went to school for. I spent the last 20 years of my life really focused on that. I just happen to know a lot about, you know, this weird music,
about a lot of shitty bands.
Exactly. So YouTube, I look at it as like, I'm going to keep doing that as long as people give a shit. If they stop giving a shit, then I guess I'll quit doing it. But as long as people are showing up, like, I think it's sad when you see people still continuing to do a thing when people don't give a fuck about it anymore. Cause they don't know what else to do with themselves. Like these bands that are like, clearly washed up, they suck, nobody's going to their shows. I understand, like, if you're washed up and you suck but people are still paying to go to the shows, I get it. Ride that fucking thing till the wheels fall off.
I know what you mean.
Go play those festivals in Spain and get those fucking paychecks all day long. But when it's like some washed up band that's playing to 15 people in Fresno, it's like, dude, this is just sad. And I don't want to be that person. So eventually the day is going to come where people don't give a fuck about me anymore. And I'll quit doing it, and I will, you know, continue to build products, because that's like the thing I, you know, feel like I'm best at.
Yeah, I see some new kids coming up. There's some new kid I just ran into. It was pretty funny. He was actually talking shit on us, but it was pretty funny how he did it, because he's like, these boomers, or whatever the fuck they call us, or whatever the word is, you know. But he's like, these boomer hardcore bands, and blah, blah, blah. He's like dissing all of us, saying that we're all old guys or whatever. But and then he's like, but what's the Cali Fest they have? The This Is Something Fest, you know.
Oh, This Is Hardcore?
No, not that This Is Hardcore, it's a Cali.
Oh, no. Sound of Fury.
Yeah. He's like, now he was saying about This Is Hardcore being like a boomer fest or whatever the word is. And he's like, now if you want to see what's really popping, you want to go to, and he started talking about that festival.
No, but Sound of Fury is like, they're just different things. Sound of Fury is super cool. I don't know if Ray Harkins is still involved with that, but he used to work it for years. I know him really well. And I actually think it's really cool. Like Sound of Fury, they've sort of specifically said, hey, we're not going to book any old bands. Not because they think old, like, to be clear, it's not because they think the old bands suck. They're just like, well, we want to do something different with all newer bands. And I think that's really cool, because I do agree that it's kind of a bummer to me that there's people out there who only care about old bands.
Yeah, I agree.
On the other hand, obviously, you know, like what Joe does with This Is Hardcore is also awesome. I think they're just two different things. I guarantee you nobody involved with Sound and Fury, like,
oh yeah,
thinks Madball sucks.
No, I agree.
Probably might be a little bit mixed up.
No, I know, I agree, but it was funny. And I actually liked it, because even how he did it, I didn't feel violated. Yeah, I was like, oh, this is a young buck talking his shit. He was talking
really. Yeah,
it was exactly. He did it well done. I'll give him that much. You know, he has a platform, he's going for it, trying to make it look really good, you know, and like trying to do it. It was pretty, and actually got me a chuckle, and it got me talking about it. Like, I don't hate on it, but it was pretty funny. I'm like, you know, finding that out. But you know, these kids today. But one I shout out everybody who's involved spreading the news, who at least still says, hey, we listen to hardcore. I'm a hardcore guy. I like hardcore. I don't like that hardcore band. Just say hardcore and make sure you say it. And when you say with balls or with a clit or whatever, now the proper way is say we whatever the PC word is.
But don't say hardcore. You can't say it that way. It's weird.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this is something I've been wanting to talk to you about.
Yeah.
And I knew you were into it, but I just saw you're a purple belt, right?
A shitty purple belt.
All right, but still a shitty purple belt is still good than a good white belt in some cases.
But because I love the sport. I follow, I trained on and off for a lot of years, no rank, but I came up training with Henzo back in the day.
Yeah.
And I love the sport and I follow the sport like crazy. So I'm always into it. And then I saw that, you trained and also that you trained seriously.
Yep.
What got you in? Because I'm a jiu-jitsu head. I actually had Remco on one of my past episodes.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And he's an old friend. During the UFC days, he was coming to our shows and, I got to be part of that behind the scenes.
That's what got me into it back in the day, was seeing UFC. And I mean, anybody who saw UFC back then, whatever, 93, 94, whenever that came out, like that was like just blew everyone's mind. But back then, I didn't actually get to start training until a while after that because it was really hard to actually find any. I trained a little bit back in the 90s, but training jiu-jitsu in the 90s was like a different beast.
It was
a mess. You happen to live, by Henzo or Horion or someone like that. But
you were getting a really watered down.
Some flaky fucking Brazilian that doesn't just give a shit.
He don't give a shit. He's probably beating you up, taking advantage. I know there was a lot of those.
Yeah, a lot of those. So I didn't really start seriously training until maybe 2004 or something like that. I started doing MMA in Cincinnati. Because back then, Cincinnati, like Ohio, had a really poppin' like regional MMA scene.
Oh, yeah.
This is when like George Gurgel and Rich Franklin.
Of course. I was going to say, right now, who would think that he would become the guy to all the guys coming out of him now? Like, I know a lot of dudes that came out of his camp, George Gurgel's camp.
Midwest, man. The Midwest MMA scene in the 2000s was sick.
Yeah.
Because there's so many of those just tough as fucking balls wrestlers.
Yes.
And like you could go to a regional MMA show in Ohio in 2005 and like see Matt Hughes and Frank Trigg walking around, and Rich Franklin might be reffing a fight. Yeah. And, the people that were fighting in those shows were no fucking joke. Yeah. I mean, not that they are now, like the,
but I know you mean, out,
but like
the hard nosed, just straight up wrestlers learn how to pass your guard and smash
beat
you. That was the
fucking
difference.
Piss out of you. And there's nothing you could do about it.
Yeah.
I started training back then. I've never been a great wrestler. I did Muay Thai pretty seriously there for a few years. I was training six days a week for a while.
Wow.
I never got any rank because, back then it was just dudes training in some garage and beating each other up.
Yeah.
It was cool. And, I enjoyed that a lot. And then I started doing just straight up jiu-jitsu, maybe 2016 or something like that. At that point I'm old and I don't want to fucking get punched or like, I just can't train at that same kind of intensity that I could when I was 25.
And when you were training, when you started training, that was all in Seattle.
Back in the 90s, I trained a little bit in Seattle, really not very much, with Marcelo Alonso. Back then, he was like the only guy around here, and this guy named Eric Dahlberg, who now I guess is a pretty well-known black belt. He was pretty well back then, very, very little with them. And trained a little bit when I lived in Montclair with a guy named Mike Merkulich. I think it was in Montclair, might have been like Bloomfield or something. A little bit up there, but not really seriously until I lived in Ohio.
And then, that's where you started hitting it hard in Ohio.
Yep. Yeah.
And where you're training now, where's the spot? Who are you training now?
Well, I'm taking a couple months off because my hands are all fucked up. I don't know if you can see, but this pinky, I broke both my pinkies a bunch. So I'm taking a little bit of time off, but I was training at a place in Seattle called Kindred. Shout out to Kyle and Alfie and everybody at Kindred. You might've seen one of our guys, Austin Daffron, fought in the combat jiu-jitsu worlds on Fight Pass recently. Fucking awesome group of guys. I love that place.
Yeah. I love the jiu-jitsu game. I got a lot of boys, I've been following the sport forever. Like I used to come back from Brazil in the 90s and bring back the Diamond magazines.
Yeah.
They were all in Portuguese, Brazilian, but just for the pictures, and I was lucky to come up with Henzo. And I was also lucky that now who are some of the his world-renowned black belt.
Sure.
I knew when they were fucking blue belts.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember Matt Serra when he was a purple belt. You know what right. I mean? Like, our class was, like, Henzo was teaching my class.
Yeah.
I like one of his black belts.
Right.
A normal class for us back then was Henzo, Rodrigo Gracie, Matt Serra, Nick Serra, and fucking Hyen, if he was in town. Yep. Hyen used to be walling.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was crazy.
What I heard.
What I loved about, one, Henzo's the best, period. Human, and he's New York hardcore guy.
Yeah, our kindred in Seattle. And by the way, if you're in the Seattle area, definitely, and you want to train jiu-jitsu, definitely hit up Kindred. Ask for Kyle. He used to be in hardcore back in the 90s too. So go check out Kindred if you're in the area. But it is of the Henzo lineage.
Oh.
And I feel like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like the Henzo lineage schools are like consistently really fucking good.
And I'll tell you why. Because of Henzo. Let me tell you, not because, we all know that. That dude's a special guy.
Yeah.
Our classes back then were like this. It was to a point, like I get goose pimples right now because they don't make dudes like that. Henzo's like
he
this.
He really put his ass on the fucking line back then in MMA in a way that a lot of jiu-jitsu guys didn't back then.
Yeah. And you know, when people say, I'll teach for nothing. This is Henzo's class back then. Yo, here, Henzo, I got my tuition for the month. Put it in the bag. It'd be a bag with money. You don't sign nothing. You could put, he didn't care. Yeah. One time I didn't show up because I was low on funds. And I walked in and I remember he's training and him without looking at me, I hear, oh shit, a ghost just walked in. And I'm like, I'm kind of feeling, you know how it is, you don't come. And he's like, what happened? I go, a little tight on loot or whatever. And he goes, when did I ever ask you for money, Hoya? This is what he said. And I said, nah, I know. But you know, he goes, all right, check this out. I'm gonna tell you this right now. You get me whenever you got me, if you ever got it. So now what's gonna be your excuse when you don't show up? I was like, but that's the type of dude that to this day I walk around. You know, I always get a text from random. What's up, Hoya? You got to come home. He always says New York City is your house, you know. And the thing about his game, and I seen he doesn't teach. He ain't trying to keep you there the first year. So, OK, let him stay. So I know in a year he's going to get a blue belt.
Yeah.
And he would teach a move. Okay, we're going to teach her, you know, passing the side guard. Then he'd go, okay, everybody match up. Then he'd go, okay, Hoya, come over here. This is when I was also a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Hoya, since you're bigger and you're not that flip, this is how you're going to do it. This is without asking a white belt, not some guy he's training. And right away, he would cater to you and you'd be like, and he would show you that attention and he'd put you on. And again, one of the main reasons why, how much love he has for the fight game and teaching. But two, at that time, you know it, like kind of what you said, now people join jiu-jitsu to be a grappling champion.
Yeah.
Back then, we learned jiu-jitsu because we wanted to learn how to fight.
Right, right.
There was a difference.
Very different.
We saw UFC and said, okay, we need to learn how to survive getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
Now guys go and they'll be like, yo, I want to be a GF, whatever, champion, and never get, you know, different mentality.
Which is totally cool, but it is absolutely just different. I actually...
I love that, the grappling game too.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu now is so much fucking more technical and better than it was 20 years ago. Like a good blue belt now would probably give a hard time to a lot of black belts 20
absolutely.
Years ago. Especially like with the leg locks and shit. There are so many blue belts out there that'll rip your goddamn leg off if you don't know how to defend it.
Absolutely. And then again, you know why Henzo's the shit? Because Henzo comes from the whole Holes lineage, the Carlson from, okay, we need the best wrestlers. Let's get the wrestlers then. We're going to learn how to wrestle. We don't know we need the best leg locks. Let's get the Sambo guys. Yeah. Let's get the, that's why I remember being at Henzo's thing and seeing Sambo guys come and seeing, you name it, he would bring them in. Let's get them in.
I always liked that Carlson approach of like, no bullshit. Like, let's just get in there and fucking give it everything we got. And if we got to get our asses beat, then we'll get our asses beat.
Exactly.
They weren't hiding behind anything.
And you know what? I love Henzo would take like me, my boy Royce. Shout out to Royce. You know, we're white belts, but we were white belts, but about grinders. He know we were in there. Yep. We were in. He loved us because he knew, oh, these motherfuckers aren't here for the shit we like. But some new guy will come and be like, yo, Royce, yo, whatever. Yo, go roll with these dudes. Even the dudes with higher rank, because he'll know we're game. Let's just see. Not about when. Let's see what this dude got. But I would walk in, see some of his. I remember one time he had these twins back in the day. Really good dudes. Big white boys, really in shape. I was like, oh, these guys are going to be champions. But they would wax everybody. One day I walk in and he's going at the one twin is going at it with this dude for like a half hour. And I'm like, wow, finally this fucking guy gets got. And I'm like, and Henzo looks at me and goes, yeah, that guy's a two-time double NCAA double wrestler, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, homeboy was like a two-stripe blue belt. I was like, okay, wow. But again, he loved the fight game. I'll tell you a good quick Henzo while we're on it. This is one of my favorites. So he walks in. He even remembers this story. I would go to rehearsal and then go train. So, he goes, Henzo's a fucking crazy guy. He's like, he goes, so he's showing me one day he's we're going over a new move. So he's like, all right, this is a move from, you know, it's an inverted arm bar. Like if I got you in side mount and I step over your head and I do an inverted arm bar from the top. So I'm looking at my boy, Royce. And I look at Royce, I'm like, all right, these are one of these bullshit moves we got to learn. You know, one of these, okay, you got to learn you're never going to use it. I remember him showing me and looking, I'm like, all right, whatever. That weekend, he tapped out Maury Smith with the same move.
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
All right, so that same armbar, we were training the week before, before, I go to class, the next day I go, Henzo, I'll never, he goes, what happened? I go, yo, I thought you were teaching me bullshit. I told my dad, and he started, he goes, why would I teach you bullshit? I teach you shit to fuck people up. I was like, I never questioned
him. You never know, like, one person's bullshit move might be your bread and butter and vice versa. Like, I get double underpasses all the time. That's my go-to. Like, I can get double underpasses on black belts. Yeah. You know, they'll probably get their guard back, but I can get a double underpass on just about anybody.
Yeah.
I'm the only person I know who passes guard that way. I don't know why. It's just what works for me. You know, and like everyone has sort of the thing that works for their brain and their body and all that stuff. So, you know, if you're training jiu-jitsu, like don't go into it with that mindset of like thinking that this will or won't work for you. Just go into it with an open mind. Do what your fucking teacher tells you.
Yes.
Like if they tell you it's this way, don't roll your eyes and be like, oh, yeah, I know you're the black belt, but this won't work for me. Do what they fucking tell you.
Absolutely. Learn it because you're going to find something within that position. You just will. Because I learned, after that, I shut my mouth. And that was the thing I loved about Henzo. Henzo was teaching what he was using.
Right.
He was like, I'm never going to show you something I wouldn't use.
Which may or may not work for you.
Yeah.
But give it a shot. You'll at least learn something from it. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you. But
absolutely.
There's so many people that go into it just like thinking they don't, you know, with a closed mind. And you see it so often. It's like, you know, lots of times, like say an upper white belt where they know a little bit, but they don't know as much as they think they know.
Yeah.
And you know, they're saying, well, this or that doesn't work for me. And the coach is like, well, yeah, it's because I fucking keep telling you to stop doing this thing.
Yes.
You won't fucking listen to me. That's why it's not working for you.
Exactly. I tell people all the time, the minute you say that, say, yo, go check out Jean-Jacques Machado.
Yeah, exactly.
Come back to me. Tell me about, oh, you need this and this to make that happen. The dude's a multiple, one of the highest ranked champions.
Yeah.
And dude got one hand.
Right.
You know. And he modified, because you know why? He learned the positions, how they should be, and then modified it to make it work for him.
Well, I will say this. It was very humbling for me. Like, I took many years off between doing MMA and then when I went to Kindred. It was very humbling for me to realize how much jiu-jitsu had evolved in the meantime, because that's basically when all the John Danaher, like, no-gi leg lock shit happened, which I knew that stuff was happening, I guess, but I hadn't really trained with anybody like that. And at Kindred, they have some people who are like very fucking, I mean, like Austin's like a nationally ranked guy doing that kind of stuff. And that is a whole different fucking ball game. I would say that revolutionized jiu-jitsu, you know, as much as MMA did.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, I'll give you another one. So we would walk in, you know, who was one of the blue belts? That was John. John was a blue belt when I was training.
God damn.
At a blue belt, I'm getting goose pimples right now. Because at a blue belt level, Henzo would knock me and be like, that's the guy right there.
Uh-huh.
And now remember this. This is when jiu-jitsu was taboo. Schools weren't cross-training. You couldn't teach people. Not everybody. Henzo would give you all the. He was like, what secret? You come here, I'm going to show you.
Back then, it's like, oh, well, no, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't show my detail to finishing an armbar because that's mine. And if you tell anyone, we've got fucking beef.
Exactly. And Henzo would teach you, I'm going to show you how I got fucking taught. He would. And you know how Henzo got? He don't got his black belts. Henzo, put it on me. Henzo gets under you, put it on. I trained more with Henzo, like hands on, like that's how he was.
And a great coach makes such a difference.
Man,
you know, I've trained with some people who are like, there's some people I've trained with who are like very good competitors, but not great teachers. There are, you know, these are two separate things. So, you know, if you get a chance to go to a seminar with someone, you know, you should do it because why not? But, you know, don't think, and there might be someone who's like kind of a shitty competitor.
But a good teacher.
A good teacher. Don't write that person off.
John Danaher. John Danaher wasn't a guy competing, winning everything at the time.
Right.
But he had a key for detail.
Right.
Early on, he would go dissect it. And one of the biggest compliments we got, it was off of him. He wouldn't know it. He probably don't even remember me, but I remember it. One day, me and my boy were rolling. He's sitting there. He goes, I would never want to run into you guys in the dark alley. And I looked at him and I said, you right. And you motherfucking right, motherfucker. But fucking no. A jiu-jitsu head. I love the game and all that. Right now, Gordon Ryan is my man. Not just right now. I'm a big Gordon Ryan fan. I like what he's doing. I like the energy he's bringing. And I'm going to see what happens with the grappling game. I'm hoping one day I'm going to get Henzo on. He always tells me I'm gonna catch him because I want to get him on the
amazing.
Podcast.
You should. That'd be amazing. What a cool opportunity, you know, to be able to train with those guys at that point. I mean, that was like it was almost like, you know, it's almost like seeing a band where you know they're gonna be big. And back then, jiu-jitsu was small enough. Like I said, we would see Rich Franklin at local shows and shit.
I know, like I'm saying exactly. I would roll with one of the guys speaking that was a good. You know, but jiu-jitsu player, but not the best teacher, like Rodrigo Gracie. He would teach some of the classes. I remember, you know, Matt, I rolled with Matt, you know, Rodrigo, you name them, you know, you could walk in there. You never, Hoyler might be there one day, you know, Helsin might roll up one day. Then you find out whatever head competitor from Brazil is there for the Pan Ams and this. I'm like, wow. And I got to see them all early on. Like some of these guys now are like, one dude, Sean Williams, I think he's known for one of his guards, Sean Williams. But I remember those guys, blue belts. They're like blue belt. They ended up.
I ended up doing the music shit. These motherfuckers became black belts.
Well, your knees are probably holding up better than theirs.
Now I am because I dropped a couple. But but I need my own dojo. But
shout out for that, by the way. I noticed that. I mean, you were a pretty big guy, you know, at one point, and you've really... you know, transformed yourself. And that's not fucking easy, especially, you know, you were a little older when you did that. That's not fucking easy.
Yeah. You know, basically I got children and they need a pops, you know, I'm a single father. So I said, I'm not gonna, when God takes me, cause I believe in God, you heathen sloths out there, but
godless, childless.
Exactly. You heathen sloths. But I believe in God. And I said, when he takes me, decides to take me, he takes me. But I'm not going to give him an advanced showing. So I said, I also wanted to be just, I want my sons to be like, at least know their father's durable. You know what I mean? And also mainly, I want to see my kids get old. I want to see them get married. And I need somebody to take care of my ass when I'm old. So I got to make sure they fucking grow up nice, wealthy, and healthy.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's not easy to do. So it's really impressive.
And you're engaged, married. You're fully married. All right.
We've been married for 3 years, but together for 9.
All right. Good. So, forget. Yeah. You've been married then.
I don't think she's going to leave me. I hope.
Yeah. Not too late.
So far, so good.
That you'll be fucked if she left.
Yeah. I would.
When we have a girl that long, we're too dependent. That's it.
It'd be game over. That would be, that's game over.
But good shit. And, what could people look out? What's new? What's new with the podcast? Anything people should be looking out for? What's the word with you right now?
You know, I try to be like consciously grateful every day that anybody gives a shit what I have to say about anything. So, you know, I'm here to make the content that the people want. So, you know, you guys tell me what's next. That's how I look at it.
Listen, I'm a big fucking fan. You know that. I'm glad you were able to do the show. I'm glad you did EZEC show too, because like I said, we all got to be a part of this shit. You know, this all helps the movement.
Shout out to Adam 22 also for putting us on.
Absolutely. Shout out to Adam. He also reached out. He, you know, he was looking, trying to get Madball on that. And I know you did that. And again, big shout out to Adam and guys like you, guys that are making waves, letting guys like us creeping through that back door. You understand? So hey, it's
an honor. Like I said, in my opinion, Madball is the greatest hardcore band of all time.
You know what? Today, I'll take your opinion as fucking law on the Smoking Word podcast. And with that, yo, Finn, on the real, mad love for fucking jumping on this shit. Later on, I'm going to do a little kind of a subject podcast on some more of the business aspect of shit. And I would like to get you on, you with my boy, with Jay Reason, who you already know. Yep. And get a little bit more on the behind the scenes on the way things work, and show people that we're not just dumb gorillas 7 days a week, maybe
anything
just six
you want,
days a week.
Anytime, just say the word.
You the man. One love. Yo, thanks for jumping on. Everybody, go support the movement. Smoking Word Podcast. We out. I'll let you know when this shit drops. All right, bro.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.